This is the Soil Sense podcast, where we believe that building healthier soils is not just a prescription, but rather a pursuit. It's a journey that requires collaboration, curiosity, and communication among farmers, researchers, agronomists, consultants, and extension. You're going to hear their stories and discover how and why they're working together to make sense out of what's happening in the soil. Hello, and thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Soil Sense. I'm your host, Tim Hamrich. What a great week last week at the Dirt Workshop. Thanks so much to all of you who attended and participated. We are hoping to use some of the audio from some of the sessions there for season four of this podcast, so make sure you're subscribed and stay tuned for that coming soon. On today's episode, we have a farmer early in her career. Carrie Olson farms with her dad, Rob, near Holly, Minnesota, about 20 miles east of the Fargo-Moorhead area. They've been fully no-till for the past 7 years, but they started trying it about 17 years ago, so it took a while for them to implement fully. They also tried strip-till at one point, but ended up sticking with no-till due to labor limitations. Carrie talks about what it's like to be one of the very few people in her area implementing these practices and what it's like to be a young female farmer in general. Then later in the episode, we talk about her experiences with biostrip till and some other soil health experiments she's been working on in her operation, so make sure you stick around for that. Her dad's health scare prompted her to take a more active role on the farm, as well as a local landlord offering her some ground to farm herself. And that's where we'll dive into this conversation with Carrie Olson.
I started college in 2014, and I think 2015, a gentleman from Holly came to me that had some farmland and actually gave me an opportunity to farm myself. And so at that point, I was just helping dad on, you know, the weekends or if I came home or things like that. But then I actually got the opportunity to get my feet wet, and I took it a little more seriously then. So I got 100 acres and, you know, just kind of came back and helped dad when I could because he was doing some of the work for mine. And then we were nearing my graduation, and he's like, you know, I think, you know, it'd be a good idea for you to get out and get a job elsewhere because I don't want to make you feel like you have to be at the farm. This has to be something you love and want to come back to. So the time I was graduating was also the time that he ended up having that health scare. And so it was kind of like, well, you know, I could go leave for 10 years, but I'm going to miss out on the learning experience here from my dad while he's still here. So I made the decision to come back, and I'm really happy I did, just because, you know, I've been here 2 years out of school, and I don't even feel like I've got my foot in the door. There's a lot to learn from him, and he's a very influential and smart person. So
that lease actually led Carrie to the opportunity to purchase her first acreage, and working with her dad allowed her to ultimately take over his leases as well.
I had that for a couple years, and then last spring or last fall, I actually got the opportunity to buy it. So that gentleman was very helpful in the start of my farming career, and I'm very grateful for him. And then my dad, you know, we were talking about transitioning the farm and how I need to take more on, and he wants to start cutting back. And so what he farms now is all the family acreage. And then he had the extra like 400 acres that I'm renting now that were rented from other landowners. And so he was like, how about, you know, let's have you meet with these landowners and have a discussion with them and see if they'll rent to you instead of me. So he has all the family land. I have all the non-family land. And yeah, they've all been very awesome, especially with this cover crop and no-till, very supportive in what we do. And yeah, giving me an opportunity to try this out.
So not far after college, Carrie was both helping her dad on her family's farm and starting to acquire acreage to farm herself. But she found there isn't a very big peer group of young female farmers committed to soil health building practices in her area.
There are a couple farmers in my area that I can discuss basic farming with, but the no-till and cover crops, they're totally against. So, you know, we'll fight back and forth because they think I'm wrong and they want to prove me wrong. But I just, you know, I don't argue. It works for us, and this is the way I want to do it. And then being a female farmer, yeah, it's been tough going into it, but it's getting a lot better. A lot of the people that I work with, I'm starting to gain that trust with, and they've been very supportive of me. But I have had, you know, some instances where, you know, like one time there was a salesman that he'd never been to the farm before, and he showed up, and I was the only one here. And he said, well, is your dad around? And I said, well, no, I'm here. You can talk to me. And he goes, well, I'll come back when your dad's here. And my dad goes, well, if he ever comes back, I'm just going to send him to you. So, you know, my family's very supportive. And, you know, at first my grandpa thought, you know, there's no way my females are going to be taking over my farm. But he's come, you know, that was years ago, and he's come around to the idea. Now, you know, he thinks it's pretty awesome that I'm here and taking over. And
Carrie is taking over. At first, her father wanted her to get a job elsewhere after college, but following his health scare, she decided she wanted to have as much time with him as possible to learn as much as she can.
Well, we're in the middle of our transition process, so this family ground, I will probably start the transition within these next 5 years. So I will be adding on that acreage and taking over the corporation, as well as I am looking for acreage as it becomes available, you know, something that is close by, it's good land, it makes sense to us. But also, like I recently had an opportunity to rent some land, but they have to, you know, value the soil health that we do. And, you know, some don't. So
access to land is the biggest barrier to encouraging more young people like Carrie to get into farming. Now, she was fortunate to have access to enough land to get started, but finding more is still a real challenge, especially since many landlords don't put a monetary value on building their soil health.
Well, a lot of the acreage around here is owned by a lot of the farmers, and they're, you know, in the same process that we are, transitioning to the next generation, and there is somebody taking over. So there's not a lot of available land, and when it does become available, it goes for, I mean, I can't afford. So, but I mean, that's the stage that we're at too in this cycle. You know, the inputs went up, and the land prices went up, and they're starting to come back down. So because we put, you know, $20 to $30 an acre of cover crop into it, I can't pay, you know, the high rents that some of the other people in the area are. So I'm just not as competitive. But if you take, you know, what I can offer in price, as well as the benefit of the cover crops and the no-till and the longevity of your land, you know, if they can make sense of that, then, you know, maybe they'd be willing to offer it to me. But because it's not as common in the area, and people just really don't understand the benefit.
Perhaps in the future, absentee landlords will prioritize the long-term health and viability of their soil enough to discount the rent to good stewards. But from where Carrie is sitting, that day doesn't appear to be arriving anytime soon.
I think we might be kind of a long ways from that. I guess a lot of the land around here that's going up for sale is things that were inherited, and they don't live here anymore, and they have no background of farming, and, you know, they don't understand. And so all they really are after is, you know, money. But for example, like the land, one of the landowners I have, it's three brothers, and they're all pretty, like 60s maybe now. And they, their parents farmed, and they had cattle. And so they understand what it takes to farm, you know, cause they've experienced it and the hardships that, you know, sometimes happen in these cycles. Like, I feel like my dad's generation was the last generation to have at least grandparents that grew up on a farm. Like, not everybody my age, you know, had a grandparent's house that had a farm, or their parents had a farm to go to. So I brought up this cattle thing to them, and, you know, bringing cattle out on the cover crops, and, you know, they thought it was awesome because that's how their parents used to do it way back when, is, you know, the grazing. And so it's kind of coming full circle for them.
Well, Carrie's dad has been interested in building soil health for some time, so she got some of her information from him. But also, she got curious enough to start working with NDSU Extension soil health specialist, Dr. Abby Wick.
I mean, a leap of faith for me, but it ended up being such a blessing. I went out to a meeting, I suppose, summer of 2017. It was out at Joe's Lodge out there. And I listened to Abby speak, and I was like, man, this is interesting. And, you know, it's stuff that my dad does at home. And I was still in school at the time. So, you know, after that meeting, I said, hey, I'm, you know, looking for something to do, you know, a job up in Fargo when I'm not home at the farm. Do you have anything on campus? And at first, Abby was like, no, but I'll make room for you. So, I started working there, but I couldn't go out in the field with her or anything because I still had class. So I was just in the lab, and that was some tedious work, very repetitive, but it was it was a great learning experience. And then as soon as I graduated, I was able to keep coming back these past two winters, and I drive her to cafe talks, and I get to set up and just listen to the other farmers, which I think is a great job, just to, you know, get to work next to Abby and learn a lot from her, but also I can bring it back to our farm and benefit us as well. So yeah, it was just kind of a blessing.
You heard her mention Joe's Lodge. That's Joe Brecker's Lodge. In fact, Carrie says her dad got some of his ideas from Joe, who you've heard back in season one of this podcast. She also said she's been able to learn from Abby and others to bring ideas back to her farm. One of those ideas has to do with saving her own rye seed.
Yeah, so one of the ideas, I guess the biggest one I took away last year was keeping your own rye. You know, we interseed rye into the corn. And Joe Eichley from NDSU is talking about how a lot of the rye seed can come in from other parts of the country and bring your wheat, their weed seeds with it. So the idea is to keep your own weed spectrum and just fly on your own rye. So we planted 30 acres of that and kept it because I had never thought about, you know, I could be getting Palmer from wherever, things like that. Otherwise, just other cover crops to try. You know, we do the biostrip that Joe does out at his farm. We've done that for years and we've enjoyed that. I flew on soybeans. I did like an oats and radish mix this year. I'd never done that before and I was pretty scared to do that, but ended up being a really big success. But I think our next step is cattle. About a month ago, we hired on a kid that I went to high school with, but he went and got his master's and he was looking to farm, but we want to tie in. He's from like a ranching background. And so we're hoping that when we hire him on, you know, he could have the cattle and we can have the crops and use them together, you know, get some full season out there. And so expand our cover crops and then they can come out and graze them and, you know, speed up that soil health process.
Finding someone who wants to bring their livestock onto the farm is certainly something we've heard before from other row crop growers on this podcast. I don't know, though, that we've talked much about the biostrip-till concept. So I asked Carrie to elaborate more on that.
So biostrip for us, biostrip-till is a natural strip-till, basically. You know, just like we have the plants do the work that the metal would do through the field. So on our drill, we're set up that our fertilizer mid-banders are in 20 inches, which lines up with our corn in 20 inches. So we put in those 20-inch mid-banders, we do a flax and radish mix. I know Joe does some fava beans and stuff like that, but the idea is the radishes break up the soil in that strip, you know, kind of make that strip till for the corn. And then pretty much where those radishes, where they, you know, leaves pretty much a hollow hole there. But I saw it just on Twitter today, Joe's field, he puts those fava beans in and when they die, they turn black. So he actually has black strips in his field and it's pretty cool. That gave me an idea in my head that we might need to try that. It's an idea to warm up that strip faster than we have had some issues with, you know, cold temps in the spring. And I think that's a negative of no-till or emergence, you know, that we maybe can't get in there as soon as other people because we don't have that black. And then on our seed openers on our drill, which is 10-inch spacing, so 10 inches on each side of that corn strip, we've tried different things. We've done some oats, some radish, some flax. I got some equip money this year, so we did some clovers, a red clover, a Brasseum clover. Just anything, you know, that can fix nitrogen or tie up some of those nutrients. And that's kind of why my dad got this idea from Joe was, we were getting manure applications spread out on our wheat fields because that's the time that we can get people up here from southern Minnesota to spread was if we had wheat out there and they, you know, had time before their busy season. And so they'd come up and spread that and then we'd drill this, biostrip into there and it, you know, take up that the nutrients and absorb it and keep it hopefully for the next crop.
As with any farmer implementing these practices, there are always tweaks to be made to continue to optimize the system. I asked Carrie what issues she is prioritizing for next year and how she's handling them.
So I guess one of the big issues that we faced this year was our corn emergence was off. You know, it was pretty wavy and all over the place. And I think that has a lot to do with the residue on the surface and, you know, the colder soils and all that, you know. But I think one of the big things that we realized is we need to invest in a stripper head where, you know, it just strips off the wheat heads and keeps all of the straw standing so that there is some black soil down there that can warm up faster and get the seed to pop up at the same time. So that's something new we're trying. Equipment has gone up in price and we haven't been able to upgrade like we have in the past. And so, you know, the idea is that if, you know, this stripper had to justify how we paid for it, you know, I ended up getting some money from the NRCS, the local NRCS, through EQIP, which helped fund it. But also, you think the beanhead, you know, we share with the wheat, well, it'll save wear and tear on that. There's not as much chaff and residue feeding through the combine, you know, causing wear and tear on that. So ideas like that. And then for corn, we didn't have the right equipment, I guess, and a lot of farmers do this, but we didn't have the right equipment to interseed the rye like we had wanted to. So we ended up, we had about V4 to V6 stage of corn. We side dressed 28%. So at that same time, we put up Gandy box mounted on the back of that and filled it with cereal rye and some radish. Should we run that? So, I mean, we didn't want to add another pass because that's our goal, you know, is as minimal passes as possible, but we were able to add something else while doing that job. So, we've interseeded, yeah, the 33 pounds of rye and 2 pounds of radish. We tried some clovers in there. But our main issue is we're 20 inch corn and it's very narrow and not much sunlight. So we're having issues getting the sand that we would like. But I'm also thinking that stripper head might help because not, you know, instead of the seed that we've broadcast on sitting on top of the residue, maybe it'll get down to the actual soil and take off. But yeah, we're running into issues with that. And it did okay, but it's not where we would like it to be. But I guess, you know, that is this whole game is trial and error and figuring out what to do. But I feel like it's always changing and more aggressive in our row cleaners, I guess. Yeah, just to move that trash out of the way for the corn seed. Yeah, I guess, and behind the combine too, the residue, you know, getting it to spread evenly has been a struggle. With the combine, I almost can't stop with wheat because if, you know, you get too much residue in an area, that'll be a problem area for corn the next year.
With all of this on her plate as a new farmer, how does Carrie know whether or not she's on the right track in her soil health journey? What metrics is she evaluating?
Well, first of all, we've been soil testing every third year and, you know, watching the rates of nutrients, and they're staying up there. You know, we still have to fertilize, but we're starting to cut back on that. Organic matter isn't decreasing anymore. It's starting to slowly increase. I don't think we're to that point yet, you know, where we've seen the big jumps, but those are things we've watched. But also just getting out and digging in the soil, you know, the structure of the soil and how it just feels like after rye, you know, we put rye in the fall and then we direct seed our soybeans into it. And it's like butter, like it's never been that smooth. Or I feel like 2019 last fall, you know, harvesting was a really, it just proved what we're doing is what we want to do because we didn't have any ruts, you know, compared to other people. And it was so forgiving. Like the ruts that we did make, they weren't there this spring. Like, you know, so it's becoming more of a sponge and absorbing a lot more and being more consistent.
Even though Carrie is among the youngest farmers you'll find out there, she's already thinking about the next generation and the long-term impacts of farming practices on the soil.
Soil health doesn't take off and they don't realize that, you know, taking the nutrients away from the soil and the, you know, eroding the soil and the topsoil that we have, that we might not be able to farm. And I think that's kind of scary. And that's my main goal in all of this is, you know, I got a niece now that's very interested in the farm and I want to be able to give her the opportunity that I was able to have. And so, yeah, that's my main goal is I just want the farm to live on for generations.
Well, thank you very much to Carrie Olson for being on the show. There aren't a lot of young beginning farmers out there, so it was certainly valuable to get her perspective. It's great to see the thought processes from older generations who care about soil health being passed along to the farmers of the future. Thanks also to the sponsors of Season 3 of Soil Sense, the North Dakota Corn Council, the North Dakota Wheat Commission, the North Dakota Barley Council, and the North Harvest Dry Bean Association. If you want more information about any of the topics we discuss here on the show, check out our website, www.ndsoilsense.com. Make sure you spread the word about this podcast, either by leaving us a rating and review on iTunes or your favorite podcast player, or shoot, just text a friend the link to this episode and spread the word. We're excited to bring you another great episode next week.